Welcome to Movements, a broadcast where we look at stories in the news and connect them to Canada's colonial history, its democracy serving a diverse population, and its foreign affairs with a global north and global south analysis. It's a broadcast that talks about power, biases, and how all of us in the Eastern Townships can care about what's going on near and far. I'm Gabrielle, and let's dive right into what's been happening.
The Quebec Community Groups Network, the QCGN, is raising concerns about Bill C-13, an update of Canada's Official Languages Act that could potentially be adopted into law by the end of this year. In addition to amending the Official Languages Act, Bill C-13 would also put in place a new law that would enact the use of French in federally regulated private businesses, first occurring in Quebec, then after 2 years applying in other areas with a strong Francophone presence in Canada. Federally regulated private businesses include banks, airlines, Via Rail, and Canada Post, among several others. In 2021, a report from the Government of Canada titled English and French Towards a Substantive Equality of Official Languages in Canada outlines the federal government's recognition that the French language was in decline and the Official Languages Act needed to be modernized to preserve its vitality. The decline of French outside Quebec is documented by Statistics Canada. In 1971, Francophone communities made up close to 7% of the population outside Quebec. By 2011, that declined to below 4%, and by 2036, according to Statistics Canada's projections, that could decrease to 3%. This decline is occurring in Quebec as well. The percentage of those who speak French at home declined from 79% in 2016 to 77.5% in 2021. In the opening of this report, the Minister of Economic Development and Official Languages, Melanie Joly, described that, quote, "The world is changing. The development of digital technology and international trade is favoring the use of English. As a result, the use of French is declining in Canada, and its vitality is a cause for concern," end quote. A move towards substantive equality means using active measures to restore bilingualism in Canada. The Act on the Use of French in Federally Regulated Private Businesses would mean that employees of businesses in Quebec and other Francophone areas would be entitled to receive all communications and documents from their employers in French, carry out their work in French, and have access to computer systems in French, among other rights. Earlier this month, the QCGN, which represents English-speaking communities in Quebec, raised concerns that the change in the Federal Official Languages Act would undermine the rights of English-speaking minorities in Quebec. They published an open letter to David Lametti, the Minister of Justice and Attorney General of Canada, explaining where that uncertainty stemmed from. Currently, this open letter has more than 1,600 signatures and is growing. When Bill C-13 says that French is the official language of Quebec, it's referencing the Charter of the French Language in Quebec, recently amended by Bill 96. Bill 96 is the law passed during Legault's last term, which strengthened the use of the French language in Quebec and drew hundreds of protesters onto the streets who were concerned about their ability to access services in English or other concerns like the cap on enrollment into English language SAGEPs. President of the QCGN, Eva Ludwig, argued that the reference to the Charter of the French Language would mean that the federal government is acquiescing, or accepting without protest, the Charter of the French Language as recently amended by Bill 96 in Quebec. I quote Ludwig here, which would use the notwithstanding clause to deny the fundamental rights and freedoms of English-speaking Quebecers, end quote. The notwithstanding clause allows provincial governments to override some rights guaranteed in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It was invoked when passing Bill 96 and Bill 21, the law banning some public servants in Quebec from wearing religious symbols. So, at face value, Bill C-13 is meant to address some very real concerns about the French-speaking minority in Canada accessing their rights outside Quebec, but also within, and official bilingualism as a whole, in particular for employees and consumers. But the symbolism involved with mentioning the Charter of the French Language and what Ludwig interprets as a federal endorsement of the notwithstanding clause is what underpins some English speakers' anxieties. Marianne Blondin, press secretary to the Minister of Official Languages, disagrees with this reasoning. Blondin points out that though Bill C-13 references the Charter of the French Language, it doesn't reference Bill 96. She also maintains that the federal government has stood against applying the Charter of the French Language to federal law, as seen when they blocked a recent bill from the Bloc Québécois that would have required sufficient knowledge of French for permanent residence in Quebec to apply for Canadian citizenship. Bill C-13 seems to demonstrate that Canada, despite its international image as a diverse society, has deep cleavages around identity and language. The QCGN's take on Bill C-13 could be seen by some Quebecers as unnecessarily divisive, and for others, an alarm that had to be sounded in order to highlight the precariousness their communities feel in Quebec. Finally, before we move on to the next topic in today's broadcast, we recognize that though the government has enacted the Indigenous Languages Act in 2019, that very recently Ottawa announced nearly $40 million in investment into Indigenous languages in the North, and that the Official Languages Act states that nothing in that act detracts from the rights of other languages, despite French and English speakers understanding that language is, quote, a part of our identity, our past, our present, and our future, as Melanie Joly puts it, as well as the meeting points and the links between our culture, this is an understanding that when Indigenous people assert, non-Indigenous people have discredited it indirectly or directly through the various forms of violence, exclusion, and opposition to policies that promote equity and address historic inequality. The following section contains a sensitive topic about violence inflicted on Indigenous peoples. A Quebec study released on Thursday, November 24th, found that at least 22 Indigenous women have undergone forced sterilization in the province since 1980. The most recent documented case was from 2019. This study is the first in Quebec to document the forced sterilization of First Nations and Inuit women. The researchers are from the Université du Québec on Abitibi-Témiscamingue. They conclude that there is an obvious presence of systemic racism in Quebec. The majority of the 35 women in this study did not consent to sterilization with a signed form. Those who did sign a form said that they were not clearly informed by medical staff on how the procedure would affect their future ability to have children. Several women did not know they had been sterilized until years later when seeking treatment for fertility issues. Canada is one of the few countries in the world where abortion is completely decriminalized. It's legal through the entire 9 months of pregnancy, though in practice, more than 99% of abortions are carried out by 20 weeks into pregnancy, and no providers in Canada will perform an abortion past a certain date. Those who need the procedure will be sent some elsewhere, such as the US. Women's reproductive rights have been a fairly contentious topic in 2022, given the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. Several countries are returning to this issue as one that can't be taken for granted. On the same day that this study came out, France adopted a bill to enshrine abortion rights in the country's constitution. So when we look at support for reproductive freedom in modern-day Canada, sterilization that is not free or informed reads a very violent alternative. The authors of this study, Susie Basile and Patricia Bouchard, explicitly tied forced sterilization with colonialism and genocide. I quote them here. Attempts by colonial states across the world to sever indigenous peoples' connection to their land and thus interrupt the transmission of knowledge about pregnancy and childbirth, together with deliberate attempts to reduce the number of indigenous people through various means, are part of an explicit plan of genocide. End quote. I want to end this section with an excerpt from a CBC documentary that's not about sterilization, but the meaning and power one woman finds in giving birth. The documentary aired recently on Friday, November 25th. It's titled The Climate Baby Dilemma, exploring how the global climate crisis is affecting people's decision to have children. Serene Fox is the one speaking in this clip. She's an Anishinaabekwe activist and artist.
I have never met an Indigenous person who didn't want to have kids because they thought the world was ending. Why would we think about not having children when we've already experienced the apocalypse? To lose our very existence, which is our culture, is the end of the world. And that's why we can't imagine not having babies. Because if we don't have babies, the colonizers win. And that's what they want. So I'm not going to give it to them. Raising children for me is a political act informed by history, because the choice to be a mother, to raise and protect my child, is the revolution. I think it's the only way to heal from genocide.
Give me time and some space, or a quick change of pace. Just something to shut me up. You get used to the blues, you get used to the numb.
To turn to a cheerful note, the honk of an incoming train at traffic hour proved to be one of great joy on November 24th. That was the Canadian Pacific Holiday train as it passed through Lennoxville. Many families with their children gathered across both sides of the rail to watch the 14 brightly lit carts roll by with their LED reindeer, snowflakes, and bells in flashing colors. This was the Canadian Pacific Holidays train return after 2 years of the pandemic. The nationwide journey has raised more than $21 million for community food banks since its debut in 1999. Concerts that are put on at its stops are free, but people are encouraged to make donations to the community food bank or bring actual donations of food. At this year's concert stop in Sherbrooke, the campaign raised $5,000 for Moisson Estrie, an organization fighting food insecurity and food waste through programs like their social market, where individuals can choose items in their food basket. The holiday season tends to see a generosity in donations, and due to this year's level of inflation raising grocery prices across Canada, more people are facing food insecurity. A study released from the University of Toronto found that in 2021, Quebec fared the best among provinces in Canada in terms of being resilient to food insecurity, perhaps because of a stronger social safety net, policies, and income support for low-income households. Outside the province, food insecurity researchers have mixed feelings about the rise in donations to food banks during the holidays. The executive director of the nonprofit Food First New Labrador, Josh Smee, emphasizes that ultimately hunger is an income issue. I'm quoting him here, "Right now, it is absolutely imperative that people donate when they can," end quote, he says, but encourages them to also reach out to, quote, "decision makers to let them know that it is not acceptable that these circumstances exist," end quote. He wants to see that provinces raise minimum wages and index social assistance to rates of inflation. In Quebec, the Quebec Solidaire, who won the riding of Sherbrooke in October, is asking just that. They want government benefits to be indexed or adjusted to inflation not once, but twice a year. The Quebec pension plan is currently indexed once a year. The MNA for Sherbrooke, Christine Labrie, says indexing pensions twice a year is a minimum to better protect seniors from inflation. The federal pension is indexed four times a year, and I can't believe that in Quebec, we are not able to do it at least twice a year, end quote. The Quebec Solidaire wants double indexing to also apply to the Quebec Parental Insurance Plan, public sector retirement pensions, and student financial assistance, among others. Food insecurity is, of course, unfortunately happening all around the world, exacerbated with the sunflower oil, fertilizer, and grain supply disruptions caused by the Russian invasion of Ukraine. In Canada's foreign affairs, on November 25th, the federal government announced that Canada would donate $30 million to the World Food Program to help with the delivery of Ukrainian grain to areas currently affected by food insecurity. For some perspective, the number of people in the world facing acute food insecurity has more than doubled from 2019 to be now 345 million people in 2022. That is just under 10 times of Canada's entire population. In Global South countries like Nigeria, South Sudan, and Yemen, the World Food Program has had to cut rations to be able to reach enough people, a process they describe as taking from the hungry to feed the starving. The World Food Program identified the food crisis as being fueled by conflict, COVID-19, and climate change. The COP27 climate talks, which ended on November 20th in Egypt, did bring about the first ever fund for losses and damages due to climate-related crises in developing countries. This agreement is historic, but details on who will contribute to that fund, where that money will come from, and which countries will benefit from the fund are all unknown. Eyes are on the Global North countries like Canada for how much and whether they will contribute. From the CP holiday train to sub-Saharan Africa, food insecurity is a crisis that donations and generosity currently are a lifeline for, but requires solutions tackling their root causes to eliminate. You've been listening to the show Movements, a broadcast where we analyze stories in the news through the lens of colonialism, democracy, and Canada's foreign affairs. Some weeks we talk about all three issues, and others just one or two. Music in today's broadcast is the song On the Rocks by Ruby Waters.